Welcome to the Sanctuary Life Podcast, where we take you through a day in the life of animal rescues and sanctuaries across the country. Whether you are an experienced sanctuary staffer, one of the countless volunteers who work so hard at sanctuaries each day, or someone who just loves animals, we hope this journey can give you a behind-the-scenes peek into just what it takes to live the sanctuary life. Now, here's your host, Brandon Feisner, co-founder of Louisville, Kentucky's Butterfly Valley Rescue and Sanctuary.
This episode marks the 10th episode since we began the Sanctuary Life podcast. We knew we needed to go big for this milestone episode, so we decided to head out to the West Coast to talk to one of our favorite rescues and sanctuaries in the country. This amazing sanctuary is committed to providing innovative care and permanent refuge to animals in need. The wonderful Viva Rescue is nestled in Menifee, California, and provides a safe haven and home for all creatures from horses to parrots to disabled goats and more. Viva Rescue is so much more than just a rescue and sanctuary, though, offering numerous programs and services, including a sanctuary for horses and farmed animals, a neonatal nursery to help neonatal kittens, goats, lambs, and other species, natural disaster rescue and response, pet assistance to low-income communities, and they even operate an animal emergency hotline to assist others. There's literally, there's nothing they don't do. So joining us today is Executive Director and Co-Founder of Viva Rescue, Maya Ben-Perlis. Maya, I want to say a huge thank you for being part of this milestone episode with us, and you and your partner Callie do such absolutely incredible work out there in Southern California and have inspired so many of us across the country.
Thank you so much. I am so honored to be here and I'm so grateful to be on this podcast with you. And congratulations on the milestone. It's amazing what you guys are doing.
Yes, we didn't know when we started if we would make it. We didn't know if we'd make it one episode or a couple episodes, and things since we've relaunched here this year have really gone well. So we are very excited to do this.
Amazing. I'm excited to be a part of it.
Yeah. So Maya, I know your background is in equine rescue and rehabilitation, caring for critically abused horses and those with serious medical, behavioral, and trust issues. What is it about horses that you feel so connected with? And can you tell us a little bit about your first horse, Thunder, that inspired you to help so many others?
Yeah, most definitely. So, you know, with horses, I originally was working, you know, in equine rescue. And even before I was working in equine rescue, I was thinking that I was going to be going into equine assisted therapy. So I was working with horses and people. And, you know, kind of combining the two of, you know, helping with, you know, people with different, you know, disabilities and mental health issues, and horses who are so incredible at, you know, being so present, being so, you know, there with you. And, you know, I just have always felt such a special connection to them. And then when I kind of learned about how critical of a need there was for, you know, equine rescue, but more importantly, equine sanctuary, because even within the, you know, equine rescue world, there are some great rescues all across the country that, you know, do equine rescue and rehome younger horses, horses that, you know, get adopted out, and horses that are in good, you know, physical condition. But there are not as many that, you know, are willing to provide lifetime sanctuary care to an animal that's going to live 25, 30 or more years. And so, you know, I kind of got interested in seeing what I could do to support the equine sanctuary world when I heard about Thunder, and I went to go, you know, check out what was going on. He needed, you know, to be taken in. He actually, as a young foal, got a brain injury of some sort. We think it was likely due to not having enough oxygen at birth, but we don't have a lot of information on his background. Our veterinarians say that he kind of has something where it would be a good explanation to say that it's like Groundhog Day for him every day. So he wakes up and he doesn't have a very good long-term memory. And so because he didn't have a good long-term memory, he wasn't able to be trained in the way that the woman who owned him was, you know, trying to train him. And so he ended up in a situation where he was being, you know, very neglected and abused throughout his lifetime. And so by the time he came into my care, you know, I was really fighting up against a lot of, you know, trauma and a lot of abuse and stuff that he had gone through. And so we worked through that together, and he really inspired me to want to help more horses in his situation and to see, you know, what bigger of an impact I could make within that world.
That is awesome. So Viva currently provides that permanent sanctuary that you talked about to horses from abuse cases, neglect, seizures, slaughter-bound horses, wild horses, seniors, and just equines in need in general. Can you tell us a little more about your equine residence and equine program as a whole and what makes that equine sanctuary at Viva so special?
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, I kind of started to talk about it a little bit, but we, you know, focus not only on the rescue side of equine rescue, but really on the sanctuary, providing that lifetime refuge to horses that a lot of times are, you know, so abused that they don't want to be around people anymore, or senior, and they've just lived through so many different homes and lived through so much in their 25, 30 years before they get to us, that, you know, they just really need this safe place to decompress and to live out the remainder of their years in peace and in freedom. And, you know, with having people that, you know, want to listen to their needs and meet them where they're at. And so, you know, what we do here is we do that to the, you know, best extent that we can. So any equine that comes into our program gets the highest level care of medical care, general care, feed, enrichment. And then we do a lot of different things to help give them whatever they need to be the happiest. So we really pride ourselves in our pasturing of our sanctuary horses. So none of our horses live in stalls or paddocks. They all live in pastures. And so they have, you know, a lot of space to be horses, to run around with each other, interact with other horses. And this is something that, you know, a lot of them had never had before they got here to the sanctuary, because predominantly across the country, most horses are stalled even in when they're in great homes. And so we really like to give them that, you know, open space where they can just be horses and they can live with other horses and build relationships with people and other animals and, you know, really just decompress and enjoy their life.
About how many horses do you all currently care for there?
Yeah, so we currently have 10 permanent equine residents. You know, obviously horses are, you know, they take up a lot of space and time and resources, financial resources and everything. So right now that's about our max for equine permanent equine residents. And we do some networking as well. But we really, you know, pride ourselves in not just, you know, the rescue and rehoming, but really the permanent care for the horses that have nowhere else to go.
Yes. And if people think that caring for and feeding your cat and your dog and animals like that are expensive, that doesn't touch even the daily care.
Exactly. Yeah. People are really surprised, you know, and I think a lot of people that, you know, even get a horse at some point in their life are shocked, you know, at the cost that goes into it. And then specifically, like here in Southern California, it's even worse. You know, like we have our bales of hay anywhere from 25 to 45 or more for a small square bale at any, you know, given time. And so it tends to be, you know, something that I think a lot of people aren't educated about going into it. And so there is, you know, such a huge need for equine sanctuary for horses that, you know, need that care.
Yes. And I think that is an interesting topic that you talked about is with your location, although everyone thinks beautiful, sunny Southern California and all the amazing benefits that go with that and the weather that go with that and all of that, the cost that we see so many of the sanctuaries that are located in Southern California and some of the other like southwestern mm-hmm. parts of the country, especially the cost of hay and some of those other items are so like astronomically expensive compared to some other areas that it has to make and add kind of additional burden onto what is already a very difficult task of raising funds and caring for these animals.
Yeah, most definitely. And, you know, we saw a lot of an increase in people who previously could afford their horses, but couldn't anymore and needed a sanctuary for them to go to during COVID, because in Southern California, everything was already so expensive with caring for horses that a lot of horse owners were really barely making it by. And then with COVID and then, you know, inflation getting even worse over the last few years, we just saw this huge influx of, you know, thousands more horses that previously had, you know, loving homes that just couldn't afford them anymore. So it is, you know, a real problem here in Southern California just because of the cost of everything. You know, you're right. We do have great weather. The horses never have to deal with snow or anything under like 40 degrees. But, you know, there is the downside to, you know, the caretakers of equines in this area just because of like the, you know, exorbitant costs.
Yes. And although, interestingly, you bring up, they don't have to deal with anything below 40 degrees. They do, unfortunately, have to deal with kind of the opposite end of that at times, which I know you all are experiencing right now with kind of excessive heat in the area and dealing with temperatures above, like in the 100s for multiple days in a row. And what is it like caring for both the equine residents and then some of the other residents that we'll talk about here shortly? What kind of changes with that care once you hit temperatures in the hundreds, especially for consecutive days?
Yeah, most definitely. So we, you know, the last few weeks we've had this horrible heat wave here. We're located in Menifee, California. So that's about an hour and a half from LA and about an hour and a half from San Diego. And so it's very hot here, you know, for anyone who knows this area, we're pretty close to Palm Springs. So it's, you know, very desert-like and it can get very hot here in the summer. And right now we're going through this heat wave that for the last few weeks we've had every single day has been, you know, over 100 degrees, some over 105 degrees. And so there's a lot more that goes into, you know, keeping the animals, you know, not just alive, but comfortable and happy and thriving through this type of extreme weather. So we do a lot here when it comes to enrichment, but when we have hot days like this, we do a lot that, you know, comes to specifically like keeping them cool enrichment. And so a lot that goes into that is, you know, having misters that bring down the temperature in their pastures and coops and different areas. The horses love to get hosed down. So the horses are getting baths like 5-6 times a day. They're getting soaked down. They love it. They love co-rolling in the dirt, staying cool. And then we do a lot of different things, you know, where we'll kind of tie that into our enrichment program where we'll, you know, freeze fruits in blocks of ice and put that in their water buckets for them to search through. That encourages, you know, hydration and encourages them to stay cool, stay hydrated, keep their electrolytes up and so forth. So we've got a lot of different, you know, things that we're constantly dealing with trying to manage the heat, but it's been a challenging few weeks for sure.
Yes, and I know one of my favorite videos, I think it was last summer when you all were going through a similar heat wave, was you all took like the kiddie pools, like the inflatable like kiddie pools, and then put water in them for the horses, and just seeing their reaction to that and how they interacted with it. It's so neat to see that, because again, you don't normally see that with horses, especially if they're not in a sanctuary environment.
Exactly. Yeah. I think that's such a, you know, beautiful thing to see sometimes, because you're right, you don't really see that with larger animals, you know, farm animals and equines getting to like play and getting to, you know, just really get to decompress in that type of way. And so that's always like a really fun thing that we'll do. Yeah, like the inflatable pools, fill them up with water and the horses will splash in it. Some of the horses are scared of water, but most of them love it and will just like roll in it. they'll definitely pop the pools, but they have a lot of fun with that. And, you know, it's always such a fun thing to, you know, be able to see these horses that had worked all their lives so hard and never really got time to just play and just to be horses, to get to experience that and get to really unlearn all the ways that they have been taught to exist as horses.
Yeah, so now that we have talked about some of your amazing equine residents, tell us a little more about some of the other amazing species that call Viva Rescue home.
Yeah, so we have a few different species here at the sanctuary. So one of our largest groups of species is the ruminants. So we have a lot of goats and sheep here at the sanctuary. That's one of our biggest programs, at least right now. We also have chicken residents and parrots, as well as a few cats at the sanctuary. So, you know, with the goats and sheep, all of them come from different cases of either abuse or neglect, or more commonly they come in because they have extreme medical conditions that require, you know, very intensive medical rehabilitation. And because there are so few programs throughout Southern California, but also throughout the country that focus on these, you know, very specific deformities or medical complications and issues, we are really, you know, a huge center for taking those very critical cases in and those very complex cases in.
Yes, and that is kind of brings us to one very specific program that you all do that is one of a kind. It's absolutely so inspiring, especially with us having having taken care of a cleft palate, multiple cleft lip goats and a cleft palate goat, and seeing some of the things you all are able to do with your Miracle Fund there at Viva Rescue, which is a ruminant cleft palate program that provides that innovative cleft palate care to neonatal goats and lamb kids from across the country. Can you tell us first a little bit about the amazing little goat named Miracle that inspired you all to start the Miracle Fund? And then just a few of the other amazing goats. And unfortunately, the hard part about anybody that has ever dealt with cleft palate, ruminants especially, knows that for as many small victories and large victories as there are, unfortunately, with the nature of those deformities and birth defects, there are just as many heartbreaks. Mm-hmm. So if you can just tell us just about Miracle and then some of the others that have kind of benefited from the Miracle Fund.
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, Miracle was an incredible goat. Miracle, unfortunately, is no longer with us, but she, you know, inspired this program that is giving the opportunity to dozens of goat and lamb kids that never would have received an opportunity and a chance to survive. So she is amazing and still to this day inspiring and creating a chance for so many. So Miracle came into our program because she had a cleft palate. It was a very severe cleft palate. And we actually, as we were rescuing her, we heard that she had a mother and a sister. And so as we were just about getting her on the plane, we had a pilot donate a flight to fly her down to Southern California because she was up in the Pacific Northwest. And we heard that she had a mother and a sister, and we, you know, we're going to do everything possible to keep that family together, you know, not only because that would be a really beautiful story and a really beautiful thing to do for that family, but also because, you know, we have seen that when these little kids, you know, don't have to be orphans and they get to stay with their families, obviously, you know, the chances of them doing better increase significantly. And so for every reason in the book, we just knew we had to do everything to keep them together and to save the whole family. So we actually did, and we rescued Miracle, her mom, Nakoa, and her sister, Piper. They all flew down. Piper was named after the Piper plane they flew on. And to this day, Piper and Nakoa are both in our sanctuary. They are living their best life because of sweet Miracle, who, you know, really essentially saved them. And so, you know, Miracle, her, like I was saying, her cleft palate was really severe, and we did surgery on her, and that was the first successful cleft palate surgery that we had done. There previously, before that surgery, before our surgeon had, you know, come up with that exact type of surgery, there had only been a few attempted throughout the country. So this is a surgery that, you know, no one really was actively doing. There's a few university hospitals who in very certain circumstances will consider doing it, but it's, you know, very specific, very, you know, not something that a lot of people will do. And there was definitely, you know, no one in Southern California that was, you know, currently doing this. And so we were very, you know, amazed that we could get this successful surgery closure. But Miracle actually had a very severe lung and heart defect. And so because of those defects on top of the cleft palate, she unfortunately didn't make it. And that's something that we see really commonly with these cleft palate kids, is when they have other deformities, those other deformities tend to be so severe that they're not even something we can, you know, fix, like a very severe heart deformity. You know, there's obviously not any heart transplants in goats or anything like that. So, you know, when they're in that type of situation, there it kind of comes out of our control, but we definitely do as, you know, much as we can to give them the greatest chance we can give them. And, you know, we've had so many amazing goat kids in our program, the Miracle Fund, and, you know, we're just constantly working to improve the care that is offered throughout the country for goats and sheep ruminants with cleft palates, because it's very under-researched, very under-cared for. Like I said, most university hospitals will refuse to treat them, will not do surgery on them, just because they think the chances of them surviving are so incredibly low. And, you know, while that is true, that doesn't make me, you know, want to give up on them, because they deserve a chance, just like everyone. And we actually, you know, have a goat right now in our program named Peaches, and she just celebrated her first birthday, and she has a very severe cleft palate, and she came into our program, and we are just so grateful for every single day we have with her. She's doing incredible. She doesn't have any aspiration pneumonia and you know, different health conditions that goats with the cleft palates usually do have. So she's doing amazing, and you know, really just she looks almost exactly like Miracle. We always say there's a little part of Miracle in her, because, you know, she's just out there thriving and living her best life despite, you know, being born with such a severe birth deformity. But they're such amazing kids. We are always so impressed with their fight and their spirit. And, you know, we just want to give the best chance possible to every single ruminant with a cleft palate that we can.
Yes, and I know one thing that you talked about that is the hardest part for people to understand is, and our vet told us this back when we had our very first cleft lip baby here, baby Jane, was that anytime you see an external deformity, especially a cleft, whether it's a lip or a palate, whatever that may be, if they have that, or whether it be leg deformities or whatever that may be, if you see it externally, chances are there's just as many deformities internally. And like you said, unfortunately, that care, as far as advanced cardiac care and some of those things to deal with those issues, which cardiac being the most common problem for those babies, just doesn't exist yet. And so unfortunately, for every step you take forward, unfortunately, it feels like you, or for every victory you have, unfortunately, it feels like there ends up being a heartbreak at some point. And with that, though, also comes the extraordinary cost. And I know this is something we've talked to you all about personally with cases. And can you just tell people that are listening what, and I know the number, but about what in the first 4, 5, 6 months of a lot of these babies' lives, just the costs that are associated with raising and trying to get surgery for some of these cleft palate babies in the Miracle Fund?
Yeah, most definitely. So, you know, what it kind of ranges depending on what, you know, how many surgeries we'll do in the first few months or, you know, what exact type of care they need. But it can be like anywhere from like $5,000 in the first few months to over $15,000 in just, you know, like the medical care and the rehabilitation and the specialized care that they need. It's a super costly endeavor. And I think that's why a lot of people don't even bother, because unfortunately the way that farmed animals are looked at in, you know, the vast majority of, you know, parts of the country is just that they don't deserve that much care. And so that's kind of something that we're trying to, you know, reimagine here, that they do deserve that care and that we are willing to, you know, attempt to give them that chance. But it is a really, you know, big hurdle to overcome that, you know, we get emails nearly every week about a cleft palate kid in need. And the unfortunate part of, you know, the reality is that with the huge, you know, financial commitment it takes to take on every cleft palate kid, we don't currently have the resources to help as many as we get requests for, because the requests just are, the need is so great, you know. And we really hope to, you know, grow the Miracle Fund to really be able to assist with even more cases, because this is like such a huge, you know, need within ruminant medical care. And it's something that, you know, we know that we can help fill, but it's definitely a huge issue that how expensive it can be.
Yes. And one part of, I know ruminant care specifically with clefts that makes it much more difficult than so many other species is, and I know you all were working on this and it makes me so excited to talk about it, was eventually working towards developing basically like a prosthetic cleft, a palate for them, so that it allowed them to get to the point that they can have surgery if needed, because that is the hardest part. Is a lot of these babies, it takes 6 months or more before they can have kind of that, in a lot of cases, that permanent closure so that their body can handle it. And it's, how do you get without, again, consistent tube feeding and other things all the time, it's trying to get them to that point. Can you tell us a little more about that project and where that's gone?
Yeah, definitely. So the, you know, we're definitely working on prosthetics and obturators to see if we can close that gap without doing multiple surgeries, in either as a, you know, temporary fix or even potentially as a more permanent fix. And so that's something that we've been working on. We've been working on creating these prosthetics. It's definitely proved to be incredibly hard in ruminants. Again, I think why so few even universities are willing to attempt working with these guys, because there are just so many more things to overcome with ruminants in regards to cleft palates, medically speaking, than there are with dogs, cats, or even humans. There's just, you know, a lot more that goes into the way that their body works, the digestive system, the way that their teeth are formed, that really make a lot of things challenging, including the, you know, development of a prosthetic. So we're currently working on different, you know, methods to see how those can be implemented in, you know, the cleft palate care. And, you know, we've had some really great success in doing temporary ones for using with a bottle and so forth. But it's definitely proved to be, you know, quite the challenge, and something that we kind of took on, you know, personally trying to 3D, you know, build it here, because it's just so specific. And there just are so many obstacles that it's definitely something we're going to be working on for a while.
Yes, and a big part of those obstacles that I think most people don't understand why it is so difficult with ruminants especially is, like you talked about, the way their anatomy is within their mouths, and the fact that in humans and in so many other species, when they develop those prosthetics for cleft palates, they can attach them to the teeth and they can build them around mm-hmm. the teeth to hold them in place. And unfortunately, goats and sheep do not have top teeth in a majority of their mouth. So yep. they don't have the ability to attach to that. So it exactly. does make it a lot more difficult.
Yeah, that, you know, really has proved to be the most challenging aspect of it is just securing these prosthetics or obturators in place in a goat's mouth in a way that they aren't going to, you know, choke or have any other issues on them, because exactly like you said, they don't have the teeth in the correct places that you would, you know, do if you were fitting a human for an obturator or even a puppy or a kitten. And so it's definitely, you know, one of the things that makes it so hard. And then on top of that, there's, you know, the whole aspect of, you know, ruminants and cud and everything there. So there's just really so much that makes, you know, cleft palate ruminant care, it kind of really does make sense when you go into the anatomy of, you know, why is it so challenging for ruminants? Why is it so much more challenging for them when we've gotten so far in other veterinary medicine and other, you know, human medicine for cleft palates?
Yeah, so prosthetics and innovative ideas are definitely not limited to the Miracle Fund and the cleft palate babies, though. Another one of the amazing aspects of the care you provide for your residents, especially with some of those small ruminants, is the innovative mobility that you all work on. And whether that is providing mobility aids such as wheelchairs or custom-made prosthetics with some of the amazing companies around the country, the splinting, the casting, the surgical intervention with amputation when necessary. Can you tell us a little more about how you all continue to kind of set the bar when it comes to innovative ways to help your residents move and some of the amazing like companies, prosthetic companies and things you all have been able to work with to make that so possible?
Definitely. So we do a lot there with innovative mobility with ruminants. Again, we get a lot of ruminants that come into our program needing amputations, needing splinting, having, you know, contracted tendons, broken legs, broken, you know, bones of their, you know, all throughout. And so it just is, you know, a really big need. And so again, we have developed a lot of, you know, ways to innovatively work towards better mobility for ruminants. Their knees are obviously a little bit different than dogs and cats when they're using mobility aids. And so just because of the nature of the, you know, area that they live in, being, you know, farm animals and their specific needs. So we do a lot with building, you know, custom wheelchairs, and we, you know, will do prosthetics if they need. A lot of the work that we do is just really tailored to the specific resident. So based on, you know, what their medical condition is, based on their personality, that will kind of help dictate what, you know, they could use. So some of our residents may be most comfortable in a prosthetic, some may be more comfortable in a certain type of wheelchair that has, you know, more wheels or more support in certain areas. And so all of it is really, you know, kind of very custom facilitated to help them with the specific things that they need and want to get around best that works for them. You know, it's very tailored to what they need, and that can range pretty vastly depending on, you know, what they have going on. We have one little goat named Tinkerbell who decided, you know, even after getting these custom-made prosthetics built to her body and custom-made wheelchairs and everything, that she actually decided she wanted to walk like a person and wanted to walk on her back two legs because she was missing her two front legs. And so, you know, in her case, we have a wheelchair to support her when she eats that is built to, you know, be comfortable for her as like a resting place, but she walks around a lot on two legs. So, you know, a lot of the work that we do is really listening to them and what they need, what they want, and then kind of responding to that and providing the mobility assistance that works best for them.
And I think you brought up earlier talking about how they're very different anatomically than cats and dogs, and the way their legs bend and the way they walk, and some of the other challenges there. What has it been like working with some of the prosthetic companies and things like that to develop like one of their kind amazing prosthetics for some of these goats and sheep, especially in order to make these this innovative mobility possible?
Yeah, we've had some great, you know, experiences working with different companies to create things that work specifically for these goat and sheep residents. And then we also do a lot here. We have some really wonderful volunteers that are super talented at helping us adjust things. So, you know, we will also go ahead and, you know, where needed, because these companies are, you know, typically most well-versed with working with, you know, dogs in wheelchairs, we'll go in and we'll kind of adjust things. We'll adjust the way that their harnesses work or the way that there's different support mechanisms throughout the cart. So it kind of, you know, is something that we're like constantly evolving and changing as the animal grows. There's obviously, you know, with goats and sheep, because they have, you know, their rumens and they're expanding, that's something that, you know, these wheelchairs, you know, have to be kind of built to be able to work around that and work with that. So there's just a lot that goes in on the, you know, definitely on the side of the, you know, wheelchair and mobility prosthetic companies. And then also here daily, just adjusting things as they need them.
Yes. And one of the goats that you brought up was Tink. And can you tell us, Tink absolutely captured our hearts from the moment you all very first posted her. She reminds us so much of a tripod goat that we have here named Phoebe. I mean, they could be twins if other than some of the physical differences, literally could be twins in attitude and everything else. And so can you tell us a little? Yeah, it's amazing, like incredible. Can you tell us a little more about Tink's story and how she is doing today?
Yeah, definitely. So Tinkerbell came in with her family. She has a mom, a brother, and a sister, and they all live here at the sanctuary. Tinkerbell is a very special goat. So she came in originally because she was born with very deformed front limbs. When we had originally heard about her, they had mentioned that she had contracted tendons, which is something that is typically something we can repair. And so we were originally taking her in, assuming that that was something we could repair. But when she got here to the sanctuary, we noticed how deformed her bones were and that this was a much bigger issue than just contracted tendons. So when our veterinary team got the imaging and was able to see, you know, how badly deformed they were, there was one of her legs that actually had a bone sticking out. And if it were to not get amputated, she would have been at risk for, you know, really busting her arm open and being at risk for very dangerous, potentially fatal infections. And so our amazing surgeon, Dr. Rosen, was able to amputate the one limb, and then she is left with another limb in the front that is very deformed and not able to be used. So she has two working back legs. And, you know, we worked for months to build these custom prosthetics that, you know, would fit her torso and her front end to kind of make up for the lack of her two front limbs. And she, you know, she walked in them. She, you know, enjoyed, you know, using the prosthetics, the wheelchairs, but she really quickly learned that she actually could stand up on her own and use her own back two legs, walking similar to how people walk. And she decided that it was easier for her to walk like that than to walk with the assistance of a wheelchair or her prosthetic. And so she is a pretty incredible go and pretty, you know, different than a lot of our residents, because most of our residents really, you know, prefer their wheelchairs, their mobility aids more than not having them. But Tinkerbell decided, I can do this on my own. And so now about 80 to 90% of the time when she's walking around, she'll walk on her own two back legs. and take breaks, come down, and then stand back up and walk again. But she does have like a custom-made wheelchair that she'll use for, you know, sitting down and eating throughout the day. Obviously, goats eat a lot throughout the day, and so she'll take breaks and sit and eat in her wheelchair. And then whenever she wants to like walk or run around fast, she's running around on her own. And you know, Tinkerbell is another story that is pretty amazing because she saved her entire family. Her mother, her brother, and her sister all were rescued from this very neglectful farm where they were all very sick there and not getting proper care, all because of Tinkerbell's deformity. So it's always amazing when we can, you know, keep families together and give them the opportunity to find sanctuary. And Tinkerbell actually predominantly lives with one of our board members. Tinkerbell decided that she didn't want to be outside in the farm. She wanted to live the very spoiled goat life. And so she lives indoors most of the time. And she obviously comes out to hang out with her family and friends and goat friends and so forth. But she is very much enjoying the very spoiled goat life on dog beds, indoors, drinking fruit water 24/7.
That is incredible. And I think one of the things that I really, and we've seen this so like throughout the entire episode already, is that theme of keeping the family together and taking something that is, that seems like such a tragic situation at first, because you have this baby that is born with a birth defect or deformity. And because of that, they were essentially able to save not only themselves and get themselves to where they could get care, but get their whole family. And that's something I love that you all do, and is such a important part that I wish more, you would see more throughout the sanctuary world.
Thank you. I appreciate that. That's something that's super important to us, you know, because we really want to look at the full picture and the full circle. We, you know, don't only want to like, okay, we hear about this baby, let's take this baby in. We're always inquiring, can we assist anyone else in their family? Is there, you know, a parent or a sibling that is also in need of, you know, care, of in need of coming to the sanctuary? And when that happens, you know, it also can be such a beautiful thing, because these residents that come in often as orphans, very sick with very severe deformities, now have like a family member on their team. And just like, you know, we with, you know, as humans, we need our community, our family, friends. We need people that love and care about us. And so in the same way, these goats do so much better when they have the opportunity to have, you know, some of their goat family, some of their sheep family with them. And so that's always something that's really beautiful whenever we are able to help accomplish that.
Yes. And one of the other amazing parts or programs that Viva Rescue does is just the state-of-the-art care that your residents receive. This can include more than, I know your website says 30 different types of holistic therapies and rehab techniques to aid in their mental and physical healing. And some of these I know that you all talk about are massage therapy and red light therapy and music therapy. And I'm kind of like, how do I become a resident at Viva? Because that sounds pretty amazing. but what can you tell us about some of these like incredible holistic healing modalities that you all use and how much of a difference they make?
Yeah, definitely. So we do a lot of therapies here, a lot of holistic therapies that assist the animals with, you know, mentally, physically, emotionally. We really like to, when animals come into the sanctuary here, to really, like I said, look at the whole picture and give them the whole picture, give them everything that they need, not only just food and water and shelter, but really look at their emotional and mental needs as well, and to fulfill those, to heal them from, you know, a lot of the abuse and neglect or trauma that they've been through. Again, similar to people going through trauma, when these animals have been through trauma, they have so much fear. They have a lot of times a lack of trust in humans because of what they've experienced. And so, you know, we'll do all sorts of things, anywhere from, you know, acupuncture, massage, we'll do craniosacral fascial therapy. A lot of something that's super, you know, popular here is, you know, the music therapy that we'll do with the animals. Music is so healing, and it's something that we find is incredibly helpful for these animals. What after, you know, what they've gone through, we have, you know, a lot of emphasis on having volunteers hang out and build specific relationships with residents that they resonate with. That's something that, you know, can be a really beautiful thing when these animals haven't had, you know, a consistent person who cares about them throughout their life. And now they can have people that, you know, consistently show up day in and day out to be there for them and to show up for them. And so we do, you know, all sorts of things, Reiki, body talk, like I said, there's, you know, so many things that we'll do here, but really, again, very much, you know, built upon what does that animal need, right? So we'll have one horse named Willow, and, you know, Willow doesn't like when she gets a massage because she doesn't trust people enough to touch her that much. And so Willow, you know, won't get a massage. We'll save that for Oakley, who really could use that, you know, healing physical massage and healing, that, you know, physical touch. And so then for Willow, we'll be like, what is, you know, Willow want, what is works within her boundaries and with what she's asking for, right? And so, like, with her, she is a, you know, huge lover of music. Whenever we have musicians come, you know, even if she's not willing to get too close to them, she is very intently paying attention to every second that they're there. And, you know, we really see that it really helps them to see that not only their physical needs are taken care of, but that people are going out of their way to really help them heal another layer of what they've been through.
Yes, and the therapy and rehab aren't the only thing that these amazing animals that call Viva Home receive. You all work so hard to provide them with species specific like play structures and enrichment items, and your all's like goat pen is one of the most magnificent like structures I've seen for goats. I absolutely love it, and love watching them play and interact on it. So can you tell us just a little more about kind of the importance and everything behind those species specific structures and then the enrichment and stuff for the residents?
Yeah, so, you know, that's something that, again, is really important to us, is really giving them this home and this refuge and this sanctuary that truly feels like a sanctuary to them and not just like they're in a shelter. You know, we don't want them to, again, just feel like, all right, I'm getting food in the morning, my, you know, basic needs are taken care of, the end. We really want to go above and beyond to provide them this fulfilling life that they are going to enjoy and love and thrive in. And so with, you know, the goats love jumping on things. They love being high up. They love obstacle courses. And so we've built this really wonderful giant playground in the goat's pasture. And it's amazing because I could have never expected, even like knowing how much goats love to be on these play structures, I could have never expected how much they would love it. And every time we expand upon it, there's just more and more goats who are on it every hour of the day. I mean, you rarely can come to the goat pasture and not see at least three or four goats on different levels of the playground. Like throughout the day, there are so many goats that are just wanting to hang up there. You know, the sheep will use it as like a shade and go underneath it and hang next to the friends. The sheep don't like to jump up on it, but the goats just, you know, are all day long, all evening long before bed, just playing on it. And it's really an extra layer of, again, providing this enriching life that is beyond what is just fulfilling, you know, their basic needs. And we find that it really creates a, you know, very peaceful environment in which they are emotionally taken care of. And so we, you know, don't see like infighting with the animals, how you would at like certain commercial farms and things like that. We're not, you know, having like injuries or anything between the animals because they're really getting this social and enrichment need met that we find is super important to them living this fulfilling, thriving, happy life.
Yes, and it is, if anybody spends any time on social media and watching the animals, you can definitely tell that they are happy and living truly their best life with those. So it is amazing to see.
We really appreciate that.
But the farm animals are not the only, and horses are not the only species that call Viva home. I know you talked earlier about some of the others, and some of those are your smaller feathered friends. Can you tell us a little more about your resident parrots that are there and some of the similarities and differences between caring for your goats and sheep and horses and then going down and caring for parrots?
Yeah, so with the parrots, you know, we have two parrots that currently reside at the sanctuary, Cleo and Calvin. They're Caic parrots. And, you know, they have, I would say, probably the highest need, highest level of need for enrichment out of all the residents at the sanctuary. I think, you know, it's, again, something that a lot of people don't really know about parrots, about how much enrichment, how much involvement they need daily to keep them content and keep them happy. They go through, you know, shredding through dozens of toys a week. They are constantly needing new mental stimulation and enrichment. So they're, you know, they've got all this music playing all the time and they've got all these different toys that are constantly being switched out. We just got a new little indoor playground for them yesterday for the hot days. They've got their indoor cages, their outdoor aviaries with all different, you know, toys and perches and ladders and all sorts of things because they just constantly need to be mentally stimulated. I think that's something that, you know, is very different for, like, you know, some of our horse residents. They spend a lot of time, what we like to call, you know, them just meditating. They like to hang within their herd and, you know, just sit together and it'll look like the horses are just, you know, hanging out and meditating together. And they won't need like as much mental stimulation when they're in a herd as like a parrot would, for example. So there definitely are, you know, some differences there. And at the same time, I think, you know, the similarities between parrots not receiving as a general statement, not a lot of times receiving the high level of care that they actually need to thrive. And the same, you know, goes for farm animals. These are just, you know, all animals that are very misunderstood. Parrots in the exotic pet trade are not, you know, people aren't given enough education as to what they need. And so they're often kept in small cages with very little enrichment, which ends up causing behavioral and medical problems throughout their life that ends up getting, you know, causing, you know, further issues within their homes. And so I think I see a lot of similarities there with the same thing that we see with farm animals, where people will say, oh, you know, aren't your goats so mean? Don't they headbutt a lot? And we say, no, you know, we got like one or two characters who will here and there, you know, like to show their dominance. But at the same time, for the most part, when they're getting all of these like needs met, they're not, you know, very aggressive animals. That's not their nature. And it's kind of the same thing with parrots. You know, they're not aggressive by nature. They're wild animals that, you know, are living in domestic environments. And so if they're not getting this like high level of, you know, dedicated enrichment, they, you know, may be showing and displaying things that are not of their nature as much.
Yes. And I love the connection there between, and how you can show the comparisons there between the farmed animals and the parrots, because it is a lot of the behaviors and things like that are caused by a lot of those same issues. And it's neat to see that comparison. So are there any specific residents that maybe we haven't talked about already that you want the world to hear their story and maybe the impact that it has made on either you personally or on Viva Rescue as a whole?
Yeah, so we have, you know, one resident that just comes to mind as you asked that is Tulip, and she has a really amazing story. Tulip is one of the GOAT residents that we have here at the sanctuary, and she was one of the original GOATs who came in with mobility issues that really inspired us to really think out of the box when it comes to innovative rehabilitation for ruminants. Tulip came in, and she was just a few months old, about 3 months old, I believe, when she came in, and the farmers had actually brought her in a wheelbarrow. They had just been, I guess, wheeling her around in this wheelbarrow because she was completely unable to walk. She was completely paralyzed when she came in. And when we went in to do imaging and diagnostics, we ended up finding out that she actually had multiple vertebrae shattered. And so, you know, essentially we had multiple veterinarians tell us that it would be impossible for us to rehabilitate her and get her out of a wheelchair. She would be confined to a wheelchair for the rest of her life. And they, for the most part, also agreed that it would be unlikely she would even survive to live in a wheelchair, that it would, you know, be extremely painful and be something that she could not survive past a few weeks. And so, you know, obviously we always very highly respect the opinions of our veterinarians and work right alongside them to ensure this, you know, the best care possible. But I just also saw this, you know, spark in Tulip, and she has fought harder than really, I think, any resident that's come in with a mobility issue that I've seen. She had the biggest fight, the biggest spirit, and she just wanted to work. She was like, what do we need to do? What work do I need to put in to get me feeling better? And she was there very presently for every single thing I asked her to do to help me rehabilitate her. And so over the course of a few months, Tulip, through, you know, we would take drives about an hour away to a canine rehabilitation center where she would do hydrotherapy, and she would, you know, basically go underwater in a treadmill and build up her strength that way, and do acupuncture and physical therapy exercises and all sorts of things like that. And so, you know, after a few months, I actually came home one day with her. We were done our hydrotherapy, and it was a long day. It was a long drive home, and coming back from like Orange County, LA traffic. And I placed her down on the porch to grab the keys and open up the door. She was still pretty small at this point, so I was like carrying her around. And so I put her down, I open up the door, and I turn around to pick her up, and she was gone. And I, you know, she was still paralyzed at this point. She was unable to walk on her own. Even with, you know, the progress we had seen, it was not enough to, you know, walk on her own. She was only able to like take a few steps with assistance. And so I was completely in shock and very confused. And I'm like looking around, and I see that there is this little goat walking, taking these very shaky steps down the driveway. And I'm just standing there, like, start sobbing. I could not believe what I saw. And later that week, one of our veterinarians came to visit for another animal resident, and she was like, oh, who's that goat? Is that, you know, someone new that I haven't met yet? And I was like, that's Tulip. And she started crying, and she was like, there's no way that's Tulip. And so she was really one of our most, you know, magnificent stories of resilience, and just being able to see how hard this goat fought to be given another chance. She knew that she was given a chance, and she was going to utilize every little bit of help she got to get her up and walking. And Tulip's doing amazing these days. She is, you know, about, I think she's going to be turning 3 next March. So she is doing really well. She runs around perfectly. You would never know that she was ever in a wheelchair now. She is just doing incredible, living her best life with her goat friends. And the only thing that she does differently is she never learned how to jump, because for the first few months of her life, she, you know, was unable to walk. And so she still does not know how to to get up on the playground by herself. She still doesn't know how to jump and play like the goats do, like jumping onto things. But aside from that, she can run around perfectly and with assistance gets on the playground up and down it. She just hasn't really mastered the art of jumping yet.
She just wants to hang out down there on the ground with her sheep for
exactly sheep for. Yeah, we call her an honorary sheep because she doesn't trust jumping up on things. But you know, I don't blame her, having, you know, coming in with the, you know, completely shattered vertebrae. I wouldn't want to be jumping around on doing parkour exercises either. So she might just be avoiding that on purpose.
Yes. So one thing that you all certainly, again, we talked earlier about the beautiful weather of Southern California and all the benefits there. One of the other sort of downsides is that unfortunately you all have to deal with a lot of other like natural disasters and issues that some of us in other parts of the country don't necessarily experience as much. So whether that be earthquakes or wildfires or other various like natural disasters, I know that you all do some assistance to others when they need that at times, but what can you tell us about that experience and what that's like personally? And I believe last year at one point you all even had to evacuate a few residents, if I remember correctly, due to a wildfire. So what is kind of that whole experience like?
Yeah, that's correct. Last year we had a wildfire that was pretty close to us, and we did have to evacuate a few of our residents as we wanted to, you know, be very, very just cautionary and not evacuating too late and stuff. Luckily, we were safe and the sanctuary is safe. We were able to return them back to the sanctuary a few days later. But we do a lot in, you know, Southern California is unfortunately full of wildfires pretty much throughout the year. We, you know, used to have a kind of fire season. Now we tend to see fires, wildfires going on throughout the year. And so what that kind of means is that, you know, because these wildfires are so intense and they can get so serious so fast, we do see that a lot of, you know, large animal owners and caretakers do not have the resources in place to evacuate their animals if need be. And so a lot of, you know, older folks and people that don't have access to horse and livestock trailers. And so when these fires come by and the local law enforcement is not able to help with that, they are, you know, put in a position where they have, you know, large animal residents that they cannot evacuate. And so we kind of come in and we will evacuate horses and other farmed animals who are in need of that assistance from wildfires. Sometimes that, you know, includes fostering them temporarily at the sanctuary. A lot of times that includes moving them to local fairgrounds and other spaces that the county has set up as evacuation locations. So we do a lot that, you know, with California wildfires, specifically assisting people free of charge with, you know, evacuating their animals so that they don't have to, you know, go into unnecessary financial distress trying to, you know, move their animals out as their home is threatened by a wildfire. And so that's like, you know, a big part of what we do all throughout the year. Last year, we assisted a local sanctuary by taking in dozens of animals from their sanctuary when they were at threat of a wildfire. So we really, you know, are aiming to always be there for our community in whatever way we can be in natural disasters, assisting with evacuation and placement if animals need. And then, you know, we also luckily haven't had to deal with too many of these, but we did assist in the Ridgecrest and Trona earthquakes a few years back with, you know, that were in a more northern part of Southern California. Very low-income communities there that had quite a lot of devastation with these earthquakes that happened and then subsequent wildfires that happened as a result of the earthquakes. And so we did a lot of work in those earthquakes. And yeah, we, you know, just we We strive to be as much of a resource for the community as we can throughout these, you know, challenging natural disasters, wherever we're able to help.
And one other thing that I know you all are passionate about is that you all are dedicated to creating a more compassionate society. And that is that recognizes the inherent value of all living beings, and whether that's human or non-human. And with you all being an LGBTQ plus run sanctuary, I know this past year obviously has been filled with a lot of questions and uncertainty and things throughout the entire country, but you all continue to push through and find the positive and shine a bright light on creating that kind of compassionate society. And you all have an amazing event coming up soon called Sanctuary Serenity. What can you tell us about this event and the importance of offering events there at the sanctuary for kind of the marginalized community members, such as those in the LGBTQIA plus community that may not have as many other events to go to?
That's a really, important thing. I really appreciate you bringing that up. You know, for us as an LGBTQIA plus run sanctuary, we, find it really important to create community, especially, because although we are in California, which, is in a much better place for, queer and trans people than all across the country for the most part. We do live in a very rural area. So, you do have to travel 1.5 to 2 hours to get to the cities that, are a little bit more progressive and safer for the LGBTQ plus community. And so, with our sanctuary, we strive to be a safe place for the community here, whether that is in the shape of volunteering or creating community events such as our Sanctuary Serenity event that we have coming up, which is a guided breathwork meditation with Monica, who is a wonderful member of our local LGBTQIA plus community, overlooking our goat pasture. And we're going to do a meet and greet, hang out with the rescued animals of the sanctuary. And, just, again, creating community. We already have that event, I think, is actually fully filled up now. So we're, really excited to see that there is, such a need and so many people that want this space. And so specifically due to the lack of events in our area for the LGBTQIA plus community, this event is specifically designed to offer a welcoming, safe space for the local community at a queer-run animal sanctuary. And our goal is to offer, these gatherings free of cost to ensure maximum accessibility for the community. So we're hoping to do more of these events as the year goes on. And, since we received such a wonderful response, I think more than ever over this last year that's been so terrifying for the LGBTQ A plus community, I think it's more important than ever that we create safe spaces for people to exist in, so that, wherever those spaces are, our community can feel safe and feel heard and loved and accepted as they are. And that's something that we always strive to be here at Viva, is a place where people can come and show up as their full selves and, provide that kind of mutual relationship, mutually beneficial relationship between themselves and the animals, where they're supporting the animals and giving love and help and care and attention to the animals, and the animals are really giving that healing, safe space to them.
Yes, and I know we do a lot of events here locally. Honestly, I will tell you some of our most favorite events and outreach things that we do anywhere are LGBTQI centered events. It's absolutely an amazing environment, and
I love that. And I love that you guys do that. I really love that about your sanctuary. I've been super grateful to see how amazing, you guys are with, all the events that you guys do in your community as well.
And it's so, I think that the amazing part of that is running a sanctuary and then hosting LGBTQI events again is that community as a whole seems to have such a amazing grasp on understanding the animal rights and what the animals have gone through and all of that, because there's such a comparison. If you don't understand that and haven't seen some of that firsthand, within yourself or your family or whatever that may be, there's such a comparison between what so many of these animals go through and some of the basic human rights and stuff that are lacking for that community at times. And so it's amazing how, that community comes in, especially as much or more than anyone else that we interact with, and just is so drawn to the animals and makes such connections. And it's just incredible to see. So I love seeing those events and hope to continue to see them spread at sanctuaries throughout the country.
Yeah, I hope so as well. You know, I think what you're saying is so important and so true, that really, I think there is so much to learn from each other. Intersectional activism is so important, because, you know, within marginalized groups, whether that be, you know, within human rights or animal rights, I think there is so much intersection there that needs to be acknowledged with people that are suffering at the hands of, you know, different people who don't want to provide basic, you know, basic rights to those marginalized groups. And so I think that is, you know, such an important comparison to draw upon. And, you know, here at Viva, we always have, you know, strive to change the world for animals and people coming from exploitative industries and systems. And, you know, we really just believe in cultivating a world where all sentient beings, whether human or non-human, you know, can feel confident to just show up as they are and be able to exist in the world as they are. And so that's something that, you know, is really important to us here. And I think it's, you know, something that I as well would really love to see, you know, more of it, because I think, you know, really creating that community where every single person and every single animal is able to exist as they are is really kind of the core, going back to the, you know, backbone of our mission.
Yes. And one opportunity that I think was really cool this year that we got to do was just a couple weeks back. One of our newest residents here is a little goat named Peanut that is actually a intersexer, a hermaphrodite goat. And it's been such a cool experience with us doing a lot of the LGBTQIA events. And even when we're doing other events, for people to come and be able to meet him and understand when they hear about someone that may be a hermaphrodite that's a human, or maybe intersex that's a human, they don't understand or can't seem to grasp that concept at times. But when they come in and see that in an animal that is cute and adorable and they want to cuddle and they want to love, all of a sudden it kind of removes a lot of those barriers, things that normally they would be like, I don't want anything to do with that. It kind of breaks down those walls and all of a sudden opens up for conversations and things that otherwise would never take place.
Definitely. I think that, you know, humanizing really people, even in, you know, as that compares to through doing that through, you know, your work with animals, can be such a beautiful way to approach people that normally, kind of like you said, would kind of be politicizing the conversation. And we have to kind of sometimes just bring that back to like where we're at, you know, grounding us in like, you're meeting, you know, this person or this animal, and like throwing, you know, aside trying to politicize everything. Like, you know, be here in the here and now and really seeing that, oh, you actually are more likely to, you know, want to learn about and accept and love these, you know, people or animals that might be different than you. And I think that really is such an important aspect, even as it relates to, you know, animals with disabilities in our care. I think I see a lot of the same comparisons again with a community that, you know, can be super, you know, marginalized and have a lot of, you know, misunderstandings and misconceptions within. And, you know, our disabled residents do a similar thing, I think, where they really will show people, wow, you know, if you can have compassion for these farmed animals that people typically don't care about, to get them up and down in a wheelchair multiple times throughout the day and getting this specific care, providing this high level of care, like, how special is that, and you know, how important is that for us to be able to, you know, show more compassion towards each other as people.
Yes, and a great example of that is like with your Miracle Fund program and cleft palate and cleft lip. You see a lot of that in humans, especially those kids are extremely bullied and have very difficult lives growing up, and numerous surgeries and a lot of issues there that the other children don't necessarily understand, and the way things are that they again are bullied and picked on and have a lot of issues there, but yet people come and meet a little goat that again has mm-hmm. that same exact birth defect that child may have, but all of a sudden everybody's like, oh my goodness, this goat is the cutest thing in the whole world. Yeah. And I'm like, hold on, why is that any different than that child that was born with the exact same thing that is sitting here suffering because every day they go to school and the kids in school can't seem to understand what is different about them?
Definitely. I think that there's so much that, you know, we can teach compassion to people through teaching compassion to animals, because again, like, just like you said, you know, I think a lot of people are more open to having that initial compassion for really cute animals and then kind of slowly translating that over to their fellow people. And I think, you know, when people ask us, like, what's the bigger scope of your mission? Like, what's, you know, why do you care so much about farmed animals? Why do you care so much about animals? Like, there's so many problems in this world, et cetera, you know? And I think what I always tend to come back to is that I see that at the root of so many of our problems, when we can treat helpless animals that don't fight back or, you know, are able to be subdued much easier, when we don't treat them right, that breeds violence, that breeds hatred, that breeds a lot of problems within our world, you know, as people. And so I think that when we come back to bringing that compassion to some of the most silenced, you know, non cared about animals, it really breeds compassion and love and acceptance. And we've really seen that, you know, in our animal residents, we've seen volunteers who will come in and they might not be people that would originally be sympathetic or understanding of people that are different, but through their interactions with the animals, kind of like you're saying, they really can have a different outlook on how they even react to other people. So I think there's just so much beauty there in kind of healing our world from in a little microcosm, you know, where it's like starting at the bottom of animals, farmed animals who are treated so poorly, and even showing them compassion and so much love and so much understanding. Like, how much more can we really affect our world at large, even throughout doing that and throughout like providing that compassion?
Yes. So if someone, Maya, wants to find out more information about Viva Rescue and what all you all do, where can they do so?
Yeah, so we are on Instagram at Viva Global Rescue. And that's typically where we, you know, are most active. Our Instagram has everything, you know, being posted daily, updates on the animals and updates on events and so forth. So that's really our most active platform. Our website is vivaglobalrescue.org. So that's just vivaglobalrescue.org. A really great way to keep up with the animals and, you know, the in-depth work that we do at a deeper level is on our Patreon, which supports the work that we do here at the sanctuary, which is patreon.com/vivarescue.
Yes, and we will make sure to tag all of those in the show notes so that everybody has easy access to them. Most importantly, what we talked about earlier, you cannot do this alone. So if our listeners want to support Viva Rescue, especially like financially with donations or anything like that, what can they do to continue to provide you all or give you all the opportunity to provide that unwavering care to these farm animals and equines that have suffered from abuse, neglect, and extreme medical conditions?
So, you know, really the best way to support the work we do is by supporting our Patreon. You can join for literally $1 a month. So it's super accessible and is super easy for most anyone to do. And, you know, it really is like showing the beauty of collective collaboration, because if, you know, 10,000 people give $1, that's $10,000 that we can, you know, change and save lives with. So that's really, you know, one of the most impactful ways you can help in a small way. And then we have lots of different, you know, programs from, you know, sponsoring animals to shopping our merchandise, shopping the animals wish list if you know anyone wants to buy them gifts. We even have like a donating a vehicle program through a different organization. So all that information can be found on our website, as well as at the link in our bio on our Instagram.
Maya, tell Callie we said hello. Thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate all that both of you are doing to build a world where all sentient beings, both human and non-human, can feel confident to be who they are in peace and freedom. So thank you so much for joining us.
Most definitely. Thank you so much for having me on again. I really appreciate it. It was really great speaking with you. And
thank you for listening to the Sanctuary Life Podcast, presented by Butterfly Valley Rescue and Sanctuary. To find out more about our podcast and how you can be a part of it, visit our webpage at butterflyvalleyrescue.com/podcast or join us on social media at Sanctuary Life Podcast. If you enjoyed this week's episode, please remember to download the episode and recommend us to family and friends. See you next time.